On the 17th day of October 2011, we are in San Diego reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, quick review of Chapter 4. Now, Chapter 4 has a distinct section at the beginning describing the history of the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna is describing the imperishable science of yoga. As he begins, I instruct this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vibhisvan. And Vibhisvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. Now, which science of yoga is that? Well, it's the one he referred to at the end of the third chapter, naturally. And what he's saying there at the end of the third chapter is that with one's intelligence, one should understand that one is transcendental to the intelligence, and with the higher self control the lower self, mind and senses. So there's a process to do that. There's a process to control that lower self. And that process is called yoga. And therefore the Christian's describing how that process of yoga came to be in this world. And so here's a little history. And so it's understood this was millions and millions of years ago that he spoke it. And then he describes how this has come down, the science has come down through what we call the disciplic succession. And this is a series of spiritual masters, gurus and disciples, who transmit this science unchanged. But unfortunately, due to the force of time, it got changed. You know, just like that famous telephone tree, it whispers into someone's ear, they whisper, and by the time it gets around, it's a different thing. So Krishna has to come again to reinstitute the parampara, he says in text 3. Now, why speak to Arjuna? Because Arjuna is his friend and his devotee. He is especially qualified to hear the science and to take it up as it is. And then Arjuna is puzzled. He represents us. Well, how could Krishna speak this science millions of years ago when he's just a contemporary of Arjuna? He's the same age as Arjuna. And so Krishna answers by explaining, well, he's different than the rest of us. He has many births. We also have many births, but we change and we forget each birth because of the trauma of death and the trauma of birth. But Krishna never changes his body, so he remembers everything. And how does he appear? By his own will. In text 6, Atma Mayaya, although I'm on board, my transcendental body never deteriorates. Although I'm the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So he doesn't change. Then the question is, why and when does he appear? And in 7 and 8, he explains that whenever the Dharma, whenever religion becomes distorted or lost, then he appears in order to reinstitute it. For three reasons: to protect the devotees of the actual religious people, to destroy the irreligious, and to reestablish Dharma. And then in 9, a very important verse, perhaps one of the most quoted in the whole Bhagavad Gita, he explains that one who understands my birth and my activities, the transcendental nature in truth, doesn't take birth again. Actually, it comes back to me, attains liberation in the spiritual world. Then in text 10, very important verse in purport, he describes this phrase, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha, comes in for the first time here at the beginning of text 10. Giving up attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So this is in that purport, Srila Prabhupada describes those who cannot take up this process because of one of these three things: too much attachment, too much fear, too much anger. So we have to combat those by the process of yoga. In text 11, another important verse, however we approach Krishna, he approaches us. He reciprocates. If we want to ignore him for millions of births, that will be there. You know, then we'll stay in the round of birth and death. But if we come to the point of actually taking up the process of devotion, then to a degree of our sincerity, Krishna will reveal himself to us. So everyone's following his path. Then he begins to describe those who are practicing sacrifices not aimed toward him. In the material world, desire for success and fruitive activities, therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly they attain fruitive result. And then in text 13 he describes the chaturvarnyam, the process of social organization according to intellectuals, military or administrators, businessmen or farmers and manual laborers. And this all comes from Krishna. Then in text 14, he describes how Krishna has no, when he comes to this world, he has no motive to come. He's not at all attached to it. He does, and it doesn't affect him like it does affect us. One who understands this about Krishna then also doesn't get affected. Then the question becomes of what is karma, what is akarma, what is vikarma? What is activity according to the rules and regulations? What is activity that doesn't bind one, transcendental activity? And what is vicious activity that very much binds one and causes suffering? This is hard to understand, he says in 17. Then this famous phrase, one who sees action and inaction and inaction and action actually sees the truth. So action and inaction means one can be meditating and not obviously doing anything, but the mind is very active. And one is not on the transcendental plane. This is called action in inaction. So there's still fruit of activity going on, even on the subtle plane. But one can be very active in yoga, be doing so many things, like we do in this temple. But if it's all linked up to Krishna, if it's in the realm of bhakti yoga, selfless service, then that's inaction, inaction, you see? In other words, there's so much external activity, but there's really no binding activity. And so it's called akarma. So that's this what this is all about. And then he describes the state of mind and of one who's in the state of inaction, though very active. A full knowledge, every endeavor is devoid of the desire for sense gratification. Then the actions have no reactions. This action and reaction is a very important point to understand, because this is why we're in this world. The living entity is eternal as a soul. We never die. Death is an illusion, as is birth, as is growing old. All of that pertains to the external body, but not to the self. So we ourselves never go through these changes. But because we're in illusion, we're identifying ourselves with this external body, which we are not. We are experiencing it as such, very powerful illusion that we're changing. So all of this is due to fruit of activity. Activity on the basis of the impulses of the senses or the mind, which is external to us, and which are either good or bad, pious or impious, and which produce good or bad results. It's a very complicated affair. Who's keeping track of all this? The super soul. It's all being kept track of. Somebody knows it all. Just like they're trying to be the super, you know, they have these spy things now. Every email is tracked. Every phone call, they're listening. And so it's all going into this big computer bank, the NSA. They're out there. They actually do it. And if it keys off a certain, if you say Allah, you know, then something happens in the computer and they start listening more to you, and they track you more, you know, maybe you're a terrorist. They're actually doing it. So they're trying to keep track of everything. They can't because they're not God. But this is the idea, the big eye in the sky. Yeah, it's for real. So why? Because supposedly they'll mete out justice. Right? Supposedly they're the good guys, and if there's some bad guys trying to harm us, then they'll mete out justice. And this, right? So the idea is this idea. Well, if we have to know, it's like if there's a crime, they have to know what happened, and from the knowing what happened, they try to figure out who did it. Right? So the idea is knowledge. What's the title of the chapter? Transcendental knowledge. So first comes knowledge. You have to know what's what. So Krishna knows everything. There's the super soul. He knows everything. And perfectly just and perfectly good. And so he's meeting out, through him, his representatives, but he's in charge, just deserts. That's called pious activity and sinful activity resulting in bad karma and good karma. You know, but all of that, bad or good, binds us. In order to get your good karma, you have to come back again in a physical body somewhere. This planet, another planet, this species, another species. Well, if it's bad karma, you're going to get another species. But the idea is that you have to come back. And coming back means again birth, again old age, again disease, again death. So even so-called good karma is bad. You see that? So the idea is we want to act in such a way, no karma. Whatever karma we have coming should be eradicated or diminished, dissipated, and we're not incurring any new karma. So that when we leave this body, we're free of any karmic reactions. And we can go back home, back to Godhead. That's the program. So action and reaction is a very important point. You can't avoid it. It's there. We have to deal with it. So here comes it's a description, these few verses, of how to act or what the symptoms are of one who's acting who's not incurring any more karma, good or bad. So that's 19:20. Full knowledge, when everything he does is free of desire for sense gratification. He's a worker, a karta. The reactions of work have been burned up by the power of knowledge. Abandoning all attachment to the results of one's activities, ever satisfied, independent, performs no fruit of action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. This is a person of Krishna consciousness. Such a person of understanding acts with mind and intelligence control, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions. That's another kind of activity. You work hard, you get something that you want, you become attached to that thing. And that brings you back. All the attachments bring you back. It's a kind of karma. Sense of proprietorship over his possessions acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working not affected by sinful reactions. Again, text 22, more description. He's satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord. Free from duality, does not envy, steady in both success and failure, never entangle or performing acts. The man who's unattached to the modes of material nature, his work is and fully situated in the knowledge, that work merges into transcendence. Then this famous text 24, Brahmapranam Brahmavir. So everything he does is simply burned up in Krishna consciousness. The offering, the effort, everything. Then come a series of sacrifices, which I'm not going to read all these. 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. It describes different persons and different sacrifices they perform. But bringing in from two other chapters, the whole Bhagavad Gita is read as a whole. So in the very end of chapter 5, Krishna says, next chapter, Bhoktaram Yagita Pasam. One must understand that I am the real enjoyer of all sacrifices, you know, to attain real peace. Not the demigods, not anyone else. And in text, in ninth chapter, he says, Ahami Sava Yagyanam Bhokta Chab Bhavarevacha. I am the enjoyer and the master of all sacrifices. If one doesn't understand that, he falls away. So ultimately, all the sacrifice is meant for Vishnu or Krishna. Then it can produce the actual desired result. Not a better situation in this world, but release from this world. Release from the bondage of matter and return back to our eternal home, Krishna's kingdom, the kingdom of God. All right, so then text 30, all these performers know the meaning of sacrifice, become cleansed of sinful reactions. Having tasted the nectar of the results, they advance toward the supreme eternal atmosphere. And no one can be happy in this world without sacrifice. What to speak of the next? Text 32, these sacrifices are proved in the Vedas. They're born in different types of work. And if you know this, you become liberated. Text 33, then sacrifice should culminate in knowledge, not simply going through the motions, but one should understand the ultimate enjoyer of the sacrifices, namely Krishna. Then the key text, text 34, perhaps the most famous in the chapter, how do we understand all of this business of sacrifice and knowledge after approach a spiritual master? Try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, render him service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So, tattva darshi. We're also meant to become tattva darshis, seers of the truth, and purify the vision through the practice of yoga. Then what's the result of getting this knowledge in truth? Having obtained real knowledge, you will never fall again into such illusion as Arjuna is in now, which is that he's identifying himself as, you know, relative to all of these, rather than a spirit soul. He's denying to fight. For by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. And then the power of this knowledge that comes from proper sacrifice and getting, you know, surrendering to the Guru, even if you're the most sinful of sinners, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you will be able to cross the ocean of miseries. So knowledge is compared to a boat, next verse compared to fire. As a blazing fire burns fire to ashes, does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all sinful reactions or reactions? So in other words, one can become liberated. There's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Knowledge is the mature fruit of mysticism. One who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. But one has to be faithful. A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge, who subdues his senses, is eligible to achieve such knowledge, and having achieved it, quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. On the other hand, one who is not faithful, who doubts revealed scriptures, does not attain God consciousness. He falls down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor the next. So here's the importance of faith. One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of action, whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated in the self, thus he is bound, not bound, by any reactions to work. Therefore, the doubts which you have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge, armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. So, understanding the background of the Bhagavad Gita, taking up the role of sacrifice in knowledge, aiming to attain transcendental knowledge, surrendering to the Guru, this is what this chapter is all about, developing faith and cultivating transcendental knowledge. Okay, let us go on to chapter 5. Now we'll chant this verse, text 1. This chapter is entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Arjuna Vacha. Do you have the page? You are? Okay. Sannyasam Karmanam Krishna.
Sannyasam Karmanam Krishna.
Punar Yogam Chashangsasi.
Punar Yogam Chashangsasi.
Yacheya Etayorekam.
Tanme Bruhi Sunishtitam.
Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all, you asked me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? Purport. In this fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that work in devotional service is better than dry mental speculation. Devotional service is easier than the latter because being transcendental in nature, it frees one from reaction. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. How to get out of this material encagement by buddhi yoga or devotional service was also explained therein. In the third chapter, it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. And in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work and devotion and inaction and knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Arjuna understands that renunciation in knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stopped? In other words, he thinks that sannyas, or renunciation in knowledge, should be altogether free from all kinds of activity, because work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. He appears not to have understood that work in full knowledge is non-reactive and is therefore the same as inaction. He inquires, therefore, whether he should cease work altogether or work with full knowledge. Yeah, just take the whole thing and just move.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, if you could just move over just a little bit. Because that's
good.
Huh? Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Om Jnanatim Randasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilatam Mena Tasmai Shri Yudhavayam. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, again, if you may recall, at the beginning of chapter 3, there was a similar question. And if we go there, we'll find that Arjuna is also saying, oh, you bewildered me, apparently. Okeshava, O Janardhan, Okeshava, this is text 1 of chapter 3. Why do you want to engage me in this work, in this ghastly warfare, if you think that intelligence is better than fruit of work? My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial to me. And there he explained again the principle of sacrifice as being not actually work. So it's a little confusing. Krishna says in the fourth chapter, it's a little hard to understand karma, akarma, and vikarma. Because the karma is also activity, but it's not fruitive. So to the untrained eye, it looks like it's the same kind of work as anyone else is doing. And here at the end of chapter 4, after all, the chapter is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. So if knowledge is so important, what do I need to do all this activity for? Well, the idea is that one is meant to act in knowledge. And that action is not karma in the sense of being anything that produces a sinful or fruitive reaction. So therefore, now we're talking about sannyas, because sannyas means giving up. Well, what do you give up? So Krishna will explain what real sannyas is here. Text 2, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Sannyasa karma yogascha. Niksheyasa karavabhav. Tayos tu karma sannyasat. Karma yogo vishishyate. The personality of God had replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation, but of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. Purport, fruitive activities seeking sense gratification are cause for material bondage. As long as one is engaged in activities aimed at improving the standard of bodily comfort, one is sure to transmigrate to different types of bodies, thereby continuing material bondage perpetually. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.4-6 confirms this as follows. So now comes these three verses that form a little lesson in the Bhagavatam, and we can discuss this passage. Very important. Nunam pramapta kurute vikarma yadindriya pritaya apranoti nasaramanyayata atmano yam asannapi kleshata asadeha parabhavastava dabodha jato yavan nijingyasata atma tattvam yavat kriyastava didam mano vai karmatmakam hina sharira bandaha evam mana karma vishampa yungte avinyatman hupadhiyamani priti na yavan mahivasu devi namuchate dehi yogena tava, which means people are mad after sense gratification, and they do not know that this present body, which is full of miseries, is a result of one's fruitive activities in the past. Although this body is temporary, it is always giving one trouble in many ways. Therefore, to act for sense gratification is not good. One is considered to be a failure in life as long as one makes no inquiry about his real identity. As long as he does not know his real identity, he has to work for fruitive results for sense gratification. And as long as one is engrossed in the consciousness of sense gratification, one has to transmigrate from one body to another. Although the mind may be engrossed in fruitive activities and influenced by ignorance, one must develop a love for devotional service to Vasudeva. Only then can one have the opportunity to get out of the bondage of material existence. Close quote. Therefore, jnana, or knowledge that one is not this material body, but spirit soul, is not sufficient for liberation. One has to act in the status of spirit soul. Otherwise, there is no escape from material bondage. Action in Krishna consciousness is not, however, action on the fruitive platform. Activities performed in full knowledge strengthen one's advancement in real knowledge. Without Krishna consciousness, mere renunciation of fruitive activities does not actually purify the heart of a conditioned soul. As long as the heart is not purified, one has to work on the fruitive platform. But action in Krishna consciousness automatically helps one escape the result of fruitive action so that one need not descend to the material platform. Therefore, action in Krishna consciousness is always superior to renunciation, which is always entails a risk of falling. Renunciation without Krishna consciousness is incomplete, as is confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 12258. Prophet Chikadaya Buddhya Hari Sambandhi Vastu Naha Mumukshubhi Parityago Vairagyam Palgu Kachite. When persons eager to achieve liberation renounce things related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking them to be material, their renunciation is called incomplete. Close quote. Renunciation is complete when it is in the knowledge that everything in existence belongs to the Lord and that no one should claim proprietorship over anything. One should understand that, factually, nothing belongs to anyone. Then where is the question of renunciation? One who knows that everything is Krishna's property is always situated in renunciation, since everything belongs to Krishna, everything should be employed in the service of Krishna. This perfect form of action in Krishna consciousness is far better than any amount of artificial renunciation by a sannyasi of the Mayavadi school. Mayavadis are impersonalists. So, here the two things are being contrasted. Sannyas and karma yoga. Sannyas being giving up activity altogether. Kind of going off to a cave somewhere and just trying to sit and not do anything. Now Krishna says at the beginning of chapter 3, you can't actually do nothing. Even if you're sitting very still, the mind is still active, isn't it? So you're doing, you're working. And the mind is also a sense. You know. So one has to have a way of, in order to achieve the goal. What is the goal? Here he described, mucchite, in the Sanskrit, liberation. This has to be a preliminary understanding that we have to try to get liberated. We're all in a very restricted state of mind here, a state of being. That we have the capacity as living entities, as spirit souls, of unending happiness, eternal life, and full knowledge, and we don't have that now. We're in a state of of mortality, of suffering and ignorance, just the opposite. So, but we're assured by all the Vedas that this is a reality, that most souls actually are in that reality, in the kingdom of God. We're the exceptions. It's not natural to suffer in any way. If you're not completely happy all the time, then we have work to do. And we should know that is an opportunity, that we have a method, we have a system, we have a process by which we can attain that state. That's the preliminary elements of faith, you know, that there is such a process. And here it's, you know, being laid out in the Bhagavad Gita, and it's manifest in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And we have a whole history, parampara, the siblic succession, great devotees, yogis, learned sages who have achieved that state. So that should be a goal of our lives, you know, the goal, the main goal of our lives, to achieve that state and break free from the bondage of birth and death. Well, how to do that? So now he says, renunciation of work and work and devotion are both good for liberation. So in other words, whatever you do, don't do any more fruitive activity, because that's just going to bind you. It's just going to keep you on the path of birth and death. But you can't just stop activity, because it's impossible. Krishna said in the beginning of chapter 2, you got to do something. So the trick is, the art is, how to live in this world. We have to feed the body, we have to get our necessities. How to work or act in this world and not be bound. That's the art of devotion. So he says, of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation. Why is it better? Because it actually is feasible, and it produces a desired result. Freedom from bondage, liberation. Now, in the purport here, Prabhupada quotes these three verses. Now, let's go over these. These are really important. So the first thing is, Prabhupada gives a kind of a summary translation. Nunam pramatta kurate vikarma yadindriya prite apanoti. Now that word vikarma came up in the previous chapter. One has to understand what is karma, what is akarma, and what is vikarma. Okay? Vikarma is what everyone's doing. Activities that have no reference to the actual laws laid down in the Vedas of any kind of restriction. And activity which produces great suffering because it's sinful. It's against the laws of God, against the laws of nature. You know? So that kind of activity is engaged in by those who are pramatta, mad. In other words, they're completely maddened by the drug of sense gratification, of strong sense gratification, unrestricted sex, drugs, and everything else that this society is famous for. So it's indriya priti. This is exactly where the word sense gratification comes from this word. Indriya priti means sense gratification. For the sake of that, apranoti, if one is acting, that's called the karma. And Rishabhdev, who's Krishna himself, he says it's not a good idea. Nasadu manne. Sadhu, in this case, doesn't mean anything like a sage. It means not good. I don't think it's very good, because the atma will then, by this activity, is sure to get another deha or body by which you suffer. Kleshada. What are those kleshas? Birth, old age, disease, and death. And, to top it off all, the threefold miseries. Those miseries caused by the body and mind, we're very familiar with these. Those that are caused by natural disturbances, global warming, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. That's caused by human beings, but it manifests as natural disturbances. right? And other people. Have anyone here ever, in all their life, not experienced suffering coming from someone else? Not just a person. How about bugs? How about animals? You know, there are so many other living entities that cause us difficulty, right? I think it's safe to say. So those are inevitable in this world. Doesn't matter if you're a billionaire or if you're a pauper on the street. You're going to suffer these difficulties in this world. So that's called klesha. And as soon as you have a physical body, I think we all could agree we have one, then you're going to get those miseries. So now the next verse describes parabhava. That's the word defeat. Defeat means not getting liberated. So it's parabhadastavada bodhajato. This defeat is born of ignorance. This is the importance of knowledge. This is, again, knowledge is so important. Abodha jato. Abodha means just the opposite of buddha, buddhi. You know the Buddha? We all know about the Buddha, right? So why? He was full of knowledge. He's a great sage. Let's go to the buddha. His buddhi, intelligence, is shining with knowledge. Abodha, just the opposite. Ab means non, not. So as long as you do not inquire into the truth of the soul, you will be full of ignorance, and that ignorance will ensure your defeat. In other words, birth and death, old age and disease. Yavat kriyas, as long as you're acting fruitively, then tavat, that long, your mind will be infected with this karmic desire for fruitive activity, which will keep you bound to a body, sharira bandha. Do you see the argument here? In other words, it's imperative that we cultivate spiritual knowledge. If we want liberation, if we want happiness, if we don't care, then it doesn't matter. But if you're interested in achieving the goal of human life, and there is a goal, getting free of this bondage of the physical body, then we have to understand this verse here. We have to find out the truth of the soul and where to find it in the Bhagavad Gita as it is. So then he winds up, evam mana karma vashang pri. So karma vashang means the impelled by your previous karma, by your fruitive desires, by a mind that's saturated. The mind is the thing. Mana is saturated with these karmic thoughts and ideas. We don't even know that. It's just this is the way I am. But it's unnatural. The mind is our worst enemy because it's got all of these illusory ideas. So as long as one is full of avidya, see the second line, avidya yatman, upadiyamani, then one will be forced to act according to this karma impulse. So what's the cure? Priti. Here comes the punchline. As long as one does not have love for me, Vasudev, Krishna, this is Rishabhdev speaking, then one cannot free the mind from karma vasha, from the impulsion of karmic thoughts and desires, fruitive desires. It's just the way it is. Those desires have to be sublimated so that we desire for God. We desire for others, not for ourselves. Then, namuchyate dehi yogena tavat. As long as one doesn't have love for Krishna, one cannot get free from the body. Therefore, mukti is included in bhakti. Mukti, liberation, is included in devotional service. If one is progressing in devotional service, he's also progressing in the plan to escape from this prison house of the material world, of which this body is the main shackle. So, and then the other verse Prabhupada quotes here, Prabhupada Chikadaya Bhujya, this is discussing what real vairagya is. Now, renunciation is a word that kind of encompasses two ideas in the Shastra, tyaga and vairagya. Let's discuss the two of them. We're much more interested in vairagya than in tyaga. Now, why is that? Well, you may remember chapter 4, text 10, we had this phrase, vita raga baya krodha. Vita means free of. One has to try to become free of these three things. Now think about it. Attachment, fear, and anger. How much is there out there? You can cut it with a knife practically. One leads to the other. If you're very attached to something, then you're setting yourself up for fear and anger. Why? Because that attachment ultimately will be threatened and broken. Suppose you're very attached to another person. A woman is attached to a man is attached to a woman. Well, it's very likely that in the course of time, there will be threats to that attachment, right, to that relationship. another person. The person will leave, they die, or get sick, or change. You see what I'm saying? So that creates fear. You know, the whole insurance industry is built on fear. Oh, I just had my child. They're dependent on me. What if I die? I have this nice car. What if someone hits it? I have this beautiful house. What if someone breaks it and steals it or burns it down? You see? I have this nice body. What if it gets sick? Oh, fear, 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 fear. Pay insurance, try to mitigate the fear. Now I'm okay. But is that really? You know, it's an illusion. No matter how much insurance you have, the things that still, your life can still, is going to be a disaster. You can't ward off that. So fear and anger. Anger is the flip side. You become angry at those who threaten the things that you like, that you want. You get mugged in the street, you become angry. You're fearful, you become angry. Right? So attachment, fear, and anger. So how to get free of that? We just went back to here. So that was text. We're in chapter 5. And where is that? Those verses. Yes. So it all starts with raga. So vairagya means freedom from attachment. A real, more precise word in English would be dispassion. You see how you see the freedom it is. You're walking in the mall. Okay, let's say a practical example. You have a certain amount of money, right, in your bank account. You know you can't buy everything, but everywhere you look, there's something you want, isn't it? Now, this clothes, this thing, this restaurant, whatever it is, that you're selling toys for my kid. It's frustrating. You can't, you know. So that's the opposite of vairagya. That's raga. Okay? But suppose that you're called the Atma Rama. Suppose you're satisfied in the self. You're satisfied chanting Hare Krishna. You see? You're in touch with this, with a spiritual source of happiness. If you happen to walk in the mall, as we do every Friday night, we're going to go to validate our parking ticket. There's nothing there I want. You're free. Who's happier? The person who wants everything and can only buy a limited thing, or the person who doesn't want anything and simply is dead? You see the value of vairagya. Plus, that attachment to Krishna takes you out of this world. Any other attachment brings you to this world. So you see how important vairagya is. It's the whole ball of wax. So here in this verse, from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Nectar of Devotion by Rupa Goswami, he gives the example of false vairagya. Now, we'll also get the other verse, the companion verse isn't chanted here, but we'll give it to you. What is real vairagya? How can you attain it? And what is false vairagya? So the real vairagya is described in this verse. Anasaktyasya vishayan yataham upayunjita nirbandha krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchate. You notice the last line? Yuktam vairagya. So the word is yukta vairagya, means detachment in yoga. So he says, anasaktasya vishaya. The word vishayan means the object of the senses. Something nice to eat, to touch, to hear, to see, all the objects of the senses that we like. He says, without attachment to them, using as appropriate in the service of Krishna. Using it. Just like we offer food, right? So that's an object of attachment. So we prepare things with love and devotion, and we offer it to Krishna for his pleasure, right? And then we take the remnants as prasadam. So that's transcendental eating. Your motive should be that Krishna should be pleased, both by the offering and also by your eating, because he's pleased by seeing, just like the spiritual master is pleased when he sees you eating the remnants. So therefore, it becomes a transcendental act. It's not just based on, I want this, I want that, I want that. You see? That's the ideal of prasad. Very important. So everything is like that. This building, there's paintings, we have art, we have all these different things, money. But it's offered to Krishna. So therefore, it's not binding. You're not attached to it for yourself, but you're attached to Krishna, and using the things that you can in his service, it becomes a means of service to him. So that's what anasaktasya vishayan yataham upayunjata nirbandha. No bondage. This is the same word in English. No bondage. In other words, you're free of bondage. Krishna sambande. You're bound up to Krishna. You want that. You can't become detached from everything, but you can become detached from the things of this world and become attached to Krishna. Just a question of transferring the attachment. This is called yukta vairagya. On the other hand, and it's, this is... the Vedic culture, because there's another whole school of how to become detached called the Mayavadis, the impersonalists. But their conception is everything is material. Everything we see, you know, doesn't matter. It could be Krishna's form, Krishna's name, Krishna's prasad, Krishna's devotees. It's all material. We have to give it all up. That's called tyag, as opposed to vairagya. So, proper chikatiya buddhya, having the mentality or conception that proper chikatiya means material, that everything is material, even some hari sambandhi vastanak. Vastanak means a thing, even those things related to hari, such as the deity, the holy name, this building, this temple, bhakti. That's called mayavadi. They say everything is maya. This mayavadi means a philosophy that you speak, it's all speaking. That everything is maya, everything is illusion. That's not our philosophy. And the result is mumukshubi paritiago. You see, the word tyaga is here. And that, you know. So mumukshubi, desiring liberation, they give up everything, paritiago, all around, as much as possible. Can't prasadam? No, it's maya. Let me just take plain gruel once a day. You know, it doesn't taste any good. Otherwise, I'll get attached. This is the maya vice. It's not a very happy group, believe me. Vairagyam pogukari. Pogu means weak. It's weak vairagya because any little stimulation will bring them down. They can't maintain that kind of renunciation of everything. Imagine if there's no holy name, there's no prasadam, there's no deities, there's no kirtan, there's no nothing. But you have to be detached from this world. Can anyone do it? No. Therefore, you have to go off to the forest, go off to the mountains, go off to the hills, and go into a cave somewhere. Where's the mercy? Where's the Harinam down on Fifth Avenue? It's all maya. That's why you don't see these guys. It's actually self-defeating. It's crazy. So that's the difference. Vairagya is essential, but how to attain it is only through Krishna consciousness, where you can transfer the attachment away from this body, this miserable bag of blood and bones. That's all it is. Away from that, to Krishna, Krishna's form, Krishna's devotees, the holy name, service. And then the attachment, it's all wholesome. There's no bad side effect. Every other kind of attachment gives you a bad side effect. The worst of which is rebirth, death, old age, disease, hurricanes. You like that? Any questions or comments? Where are we? 806. Okay.
Comment that if we ever feel any unhappiness, then that's a sign that we are working.
You're an illusion.
Right. But by material standards, a good person is someone who they are willing to settle for not really being happy. And when something bad happens to them, then they just don't think about it too much and they don't know actually why they're unhappy.
Yeah. That's the complete illusion.
And then about the renunciation part, I remember hearing about one time some disciples of Prabhupada showed him a picture of Mayavadi Sannyas. He was next to a big pile of gold coins, and he was like, you know,
pushing it away.
Yeah, pushing it away. And Prabhupada said, "You can take a picture of me." Hugging the coins, because I'll use them in Krishna service.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Is you know, false renunciation, literally tyag. Tyag means run away from it. Whatever object can be enjoyed or is valuable in the material sense. Oh no! It's too tempting. You know, I don't want anything to do with it. But that's Krishna's energy. The whole idea is renunciation ultimately is illusion. Tyaga is an illusion. Vairagya is not. But tyaga is a totally illusion. Prabhupada used the example, you walk into the Bank of America, I renounce all the money here. Yeah, right. And just take you away, you know, in white, men in the white suits, we used to call them. It's not your money. You know, I renounce it. A big deal. That's the same thing as here. We come to this world. What do we really own? We come in naked, we leave naked. We come with nothing, we leave with nothing. And in between, we try to get our name of the body attached to something that's valuable. And so now I own so many things. You know, Steve Jobs had $8.5 billion in his name, but that body is now gone. Where is he now? What does he have now? That's him. That's not, you know, that the real living entity who was in the Steve Jobs body is now in another body somewhere, starting again at zero. So what do you really own in between? The whole thing is an illusion, you see. So, but still, money is real. Like, it can be used as a tool. How did this temple get built? You know, it transformed into what it is. Well, there has to be some money involved. That money is Krishna's energy. There's nothing inherently wrong with a gun. It can be used by the police to save someone, or it can be used by a criminal to rob someone. So the gun itself is not guilty. It's how you use it. So those who renounce the money are ignorant how it can be used nicely for spiritual advancement, for oneself and for others. So probably bring all the money. We'll build temples with it. And he showed by his life that he himself was detached. This is the key. He didn't enjoy the facilities. Even in an advanced age, he's still traveling. You know what it's like to travel when you're 75 years old? Constantly? It's not easy. You know, I travel now at 62, 3, 4. And it's just taking one trip a five-hour trip or eight-hour trip to Florida. It's a strain on the life airs, cosmic rays are coming down. You know, whenever you get in that plane, you're not so protected from the cosmic rays. I don't know if you know that. Literally, you're getting a nice dose. Anyway, if you're sensitive to that. So it's just a strain. What to speak of constantly getting on? You know. So it's he showed he was detached. He was attached to spreading Krishna consciousness. He was attached to giving Krishna consciousness to his disciples and seeing them progress. He wasn't attached to the physical comforts of having so much money and so much influence. So it's an example of Yukta Vairagya. All right, so let's read one more. Yes, Prabhu.
I was just going to ask that earlier you were speaking about actions and reactions, karma, bad karma, things of that nature. Is with bad karma comes birth into lower species. What lower species?
It's real bad. What lower species? You haven't seen them around? Dogs, cats, bugs, birds, fish, snakes. There's 8 million other species out there, you know, according to the Vedas. Take your pick. It can happen. This is the greatest loss. It's a great tragedy. Here we are in the human form of life. You know, there's all six of us here in this temple, and we're now reading the Bhagavad Gita. How many lives did we go through? How many situations did we go through to have this good, you know, this opportunity to understand this knowledge by which we can break free of this round of birth and death, and to waste the human form of life, you know, dissipated through sense gratification in illusion, and then if it's a gross enough vikarma, remember that it's a vikarma, vicious activity, we can lose the human form entirely. And then have to come up again through the species. There's a process of evolution, not that the forms change, but it's like going from one apartment to another. It's different apartments. Everything is temporary. Nobody stays for permanently, obviously. But according to your, how much you can pay, that means your good karma, and you get a better body. Okay, and we're all Americans here. There's only 300 and some odd million of us. And we're living in San Diego. There's only a few million of us, you know. And we have more or less our good health. There's only a smaller portion of us, you know. But most important is that somehow or other we're a little bit interested in this philosophy. Then there's really only a handful of us. So how fortunate we are, don't waste the opportunity. That's the idea. And the only way to do that is to develop the knowledge by which you can act in such a way to, open up the path, you know, that toward higher activity. Not just to open up the path down to very painful suffering. These animals are all suffering terribly in ignorance. You know, it's just a life of fear and trying to get them to eat, mating, for a few seconds, and then basically just short and brutish. It's very difficult. We don't want to go there. You know, human life is a great gift.
Yeah. With the vikarma, is it also possible to go to a hell, so to speak?
Uh-huh. Yeah, those are real. I mean, there's two, manifestations of hell. There's actual hell, where you feel yourself living for millions of years in horrible suffering, even though it may only be a few seconds, you're in your subtle body. So the time is like infinitely malleable. We've all had experience. If you're really in a suffering condition, time drags out. If you're having a good time, time goes like that, right? So if you're really suffering, it may only be objectively a few seconds, but it seems like millions of years. But, you know, even to be born in a human form of life, in many places in this world, it's like going to hell. Is it really that much worse if you go to, you know, the hell described in the fifth canto than if you get born in the Congo somewhere and you have to go through that? You know, the point is that we're very fortunate now. Don't waste it. Act in such a way that you'll stay fortunate. And if you take another birth, it'll be a birth by which you can continue your spiritual quest. Otherwise, if you waste it, your whereabouts are unknown. Great suffering. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.